Good morning. So here we are in the Ossipee Hall in Philadelphia for our second meeting of the new year, the first since the esotericist new year, which was the lighting up of mine, which was celebrated on January 4th. So hello, everyone, and welcome. So we just want to say that if you're coming into Theosophy Hall, please don't wear any artificial fragrances because it can bother people that have sensitivities. And we also want to just go over Zoom etiquette very briefly. If you're going to be moving around, please go off camera. And please be vigilant to mute your mic even after you share, even if you want to share again, a follow-up, just in the meantime, please mute your mic. We would appreciate it because sometimes there's extraneous noise in the background. So during the pandemic, it's been very comforting to have the option of Zoom. We are now, however, open for live meetings, if you're able to come to 1917 Walnut Street in Philadelphia. On Sunday mornings, the doors open at 10:30. Wednesday evening, the door opens at 6:15. There's a 6:15 to 7:15 opportunity to do independent study or read the part for the evening. This Wednesday is chapter 8 in the Ocean of Theosophy, pages 60 to 64. It's on evolution. So we invite you to read that ahead of time with the reference. So that goes out a day or two before the meeting. So all of our meetings here are voluntary contributions. All students are voluntary. We contribute our time, our service, and our money voluntarily. Nobody gets paid for this. It's a labor of love. And so we mentioned Wednesday. We did not mention Friday. Friday is Zoom only, and the meeting is from 6:30 to 7:30. And so we're doing Western Occultism. It's a series of 12 articles. I believe we're in the 10th installment coming up. We're trying to come up with something else to pivot to after we are done with Western Occultism. So we're going to read the declaration now. And before we begin the talk on the topic of the month is the path of spiritual evolution. And today's talk will be on the purpose of spiritual evolution. So here's our declaration, which we abide by, and all ULTs around the world. This is the guiding, this is our guide, so to say. Declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So the spiritual evolution, a lot of the principles were just read, really the fundamental principles in our declaration. The purpose is, we're striving for a truer realization of the self. And how do we do that? Well, it's through a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. Now, universal brotherhood is not only men and women and everyone, but it's also all of life, because we're all connected. There is no separation. There's only the illusion of separateness. And we are here to, in a sense, recover our full identity as spiritual beings. We are, you know, we're mind beings. We have the Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, our three higher principles. And in English, Atma is spirit, Buddhi is spiritual soul, Manas is mind. That is where man comes from. The word man and mankind is Manas, the thinker. This is also known as the eternal pilgrim. It's imperishable. Now, we periodically reincarnate from time to time and age to age through the various races, using the vehicles that are here for us in embodied existence. So spirit needs a vehicle. And the vehicles are, in Sanskrit, they are, they are Manas. It's actually lower Manas, the lower part, because Manas is dual. But we have the astral body, also known as the Stula Sharira, or design body. That's our physical, our astral body is where the real senses are. That is how we sense. That is our electromagnetic dynamic body, that's our real body. The physical body, in a sense, is just a shell for contacting the lower kingdoms. So we have breath too, or prana, as well. So we have the body, the breath, the astral body, and the desire principle known as kama or kama. It's said both ways. Probably kama is the more correct, but then it sounds like a punctuation point. So, and when you say comic, it sounds like, you know, so we tend to say kama. That's just the barest sketch of our principles. But spirit, it does not actually evolve. The highest part, Atma. It's Atma and Buddhi are universal principles. They are within everything. Everything is connected. And even in the microphone, the doorknob, the desk, these principles of Atma Buddhi are everything. In a sense, you could say it's like it's the glue. It holds everything together. We don't start to get into individual principles until we get into the mind principle, manas. That is the thinker. So we are a personal spiritual entity within the personal physical man. So there's an instinctive feeling or a proximity of another spiritual world, an invisible world. Humanity is the highest manifestation here of the unseen supreme deity. Each man is a manifestation of his God. And all nature is one sounding board. So as we said, all is interconnected. So the same power that is in all men are fundamentally spiritual in essence, identical in nature, and we are separated only in action. So all suffering, as all love and sacrifice, proceeds from the spiritual will. It is the creating, cohering, and also the disintegrating principle of the energy of the self, that is our higher self. And in our theosophical glossary, it says, spirit belongs to the universal consciousness. It is formless and immaterial. Spirit is no entity, but where there is a form, there is pain and suffering. An individual spirit may be described as a center of consciousness, a self-sentient and self-conscious center. So, as we said, consciousness needs a vehicle. But so we are here evolving through these bodies, through eons of time. As we mentioned in the beginning, the Esotericist New Year is January 4th. That is the day that is sacred to the solar petries. The solar petries gave us the spark, lit up our manas, because our mind principle, because for approximately 300 million years, our bodies were changing and evolving. And we were, in a sense, like brutes or like animals. But when we say we, that was not us. They were forms that we stepped into. So we should never say that we were once animals, just as the theosophy says, you know, we were never apes. We did not descend from apes. Spirit always comes from the highest involuting. The turning point is the lighting up of manas. The vehicles that we use, the male and female, split, and the mind principle was lit up. And for the last 18 million years, we have been evolving. So, that manas, that light, was given to us from the divine progenitors and the king initiates of old, who gave us all the arts and sciences and instructed us to a point and then retired from the scene. They're still there, but they're not actively involved, because the whole point of evolution, spiritual evolution, is for us to grow, for us to develop, for us to become these thinkers, for us to learn. Not only that, but for us to help the lower kingdoms, because it's one grand continuum. The lowest lives, you know, everything is alive, everything is sentient, everything has consciousness. There's points of consciousness everywhere. It's just a matter of degree. We as self-conscious thinkers are able to choose. Those beings who lit us up, as it were, and are now not using bodies, but are behind the scene, in a sense, they're part of a guardian wall. They're there, and they vouchsafe the teachings and the sciences and arts that they've given us, but they can't do the work for us. So we have a grand mission here, not only our own evolution, but all of nature, because just as we stepped into these, when our minds were lit up, we stepped into these human forms and became the rational animal, as it were. Although, you know, we are using animal forms. There's no doubt about it. But that's not our nature. Our nature is spiritual. Our nature is divine. Our nature is nascent gods, gods in potential, not poor, miserable sinners, not inherently imperfect and weak, but inherently perfectible. So the kingdoms below us, all the animals that we know of, and all the other lives in other kingdoms, even below the mineral, the vegetable, and the animal, there are elemental lives below that. They are the nerve currents of nature. They are, as it were, you know, the spirits of the water, the earth, the fire, earth, water, fire, and air. And these are, they are the nerve currents of nature. We work with them, we impress them, and are impressed by them. There's a constant interchange. There's a constant coming and going. There's a term, it's a Sanskrit term. It's called Nitya Pralaya, which means a constant coming and going. A pralaya means rest. In our after death states, we go through a period of rest. This talk in this class is not concerned with the after-death states, which we do go into. I mean, it can be brought up during class, of course, but it's not the topic for today. Today's topic is the spiritual evolution, the active spiritual evolution, not the passive states. But this constant interchange, this Nitya Pralaya, is this constant coming to and going, like the waves of a shore. It's ceaseless. There is no stoppage of evolution whatsoever. We can retard our evolution by surrendering to the lower, but that's not the purpose. And that's someone who is attracted to religion and philosophy, and you know, they're, and the sciences, obviously they're searching. They want to grow, they want to know. Science comes from the root of science, means to know. And so we're here to learn. Life is all about learning, 100%. So now, if we do surrender to our lower mind, which of course happens, that's the way we grow. We reincarnate at this point in our evolution because it's absolutely necessary. There are great beings who voluntarily incarnate to help man once they've completely balanced out all their karma, all their personal karma, they can work with universal principles. But if we surrender, there's getting back to the elementals for a second here. So the elementals are the means by which karma operates. They operate on three planes of being, and this is very important. There's the consciousness on our physical plane, then there's the astral or psychic, which is our emotions, our feelings, our desires. Again, that kama principle is involved there. And then there's the mental plane, which are intellectual processes. So our man's thoughts, feelings, emotions are all powerful forces which affect for good or ill all the beings below us, causing all of them to take on the nature of our activities. The elemental lives spontaneously repeat these vibrations whenever conditions permit, reflecting our passions, emotions, desires, and feelings. Each repetition of the elemental force becomes more confirmed in its definite quality. The elementals are the nerve centers of nature and return for good or ill the impressions and energy that man transmits. Elementals are like mirrors. They mirror back. And we can see it functioning if we're with someone that, and we get, they often mirror our feelings. Like it's a natural thing. So that's why we're told to avoid hasty judgments and anger, impulsiveness. That's a sense of passivity, as it were. We're not thinking before we're acting. We're not thinking before we're speaking. We just knee-jerk reactions. And odds are we're going to get that right back. So that's something that we always need to be on guard for. So also, our three lower principles are they're always constantly changing so that we grow, we can grow coarser or more selfish, or we can become more refined and unselfish. There's a law. It's called the cyclic return of impressions. And that's when the elementals stir up in our consciousness thoughts and desires, which lead to their re-energization. So a passive mind will be influenced by these promptings. These continue to repeat if we are passive, and it can actually subvert or derail our evolutionary trajectory, if we may use that word. So the path from freedom from the qualities of matter is the path of spiritual and intellectual dominion of spirit. It is our intelligence over the elemental forces of our animal nature. So we talk about often in theosophy of raising the self by the self, meaning raising the lower self by the higher self. Now, getting access to the higher self, the highest we have access to is that permanent part of our being, again, which is Buddhi. It's spiritual soul. It's the accretions of when we reincarnate, we'll just briefly say in the after-death states, the lower is sloughed off, and whatever is of the highest and permanent and helpful and that helps our evolution and everyone else's evolution, that is retained in that Bodhi. So that Bodhi principle, that spiritual soul, is what we're trying to build up life after life. And it becomes permanent. It becomes our possession, as it were. Although you have to give it away to keep it, as it were, through altruism. It belongs to that reincarnating being, but it's not a possession that one would want to hoard. One wants to give it away, to shine that light, to be a beacon of light, to be a point of light, to inspire others. So it's not a selfish thing whatsoever. So this Bodhi, we increase it through duty. It's duty is what is due others. It is our dharma. So this spiritual soul, these higher principles, which it goes through Manas, the thinker, because we need to reflect. We need to consider, we need to be rational beings. We need the intellect very much so, but we have to watch out becoming wholly intellectual, because if we become wholly intellectual, we are actually becoming selfish, and it tends downward. It actually, our evolutionary process is in a sense thwarted by personal desires of a separative nature. So we just want to say, wrapping it up now, because we want to give plenty of time for discussion, that we are preparing the soil for the future seeds, so that they can sprout and grow, so that we can sprout and grow as well, and take part in that, in those principles, in the lower principles, because we are here to prepare the way for the mineral, animal, vegetable, plant, and even those elemental kingdoms, which are not, you know, they're below the mineral, which has cohesion as its form of intelligence, and the plant, which has sensitivity, the animal has mobility and consciousness on all these planes, and there's much intelligence in the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom, for that matter. And even the mineral kingdom does have intelligence. You see that spark when you hit a rock, it sparks. That's intelligence. And cohesion is intelligence as well. So we are the manifesting sparks ourselves. And we bring together our hearts, our minds, and our psychic natures. And humanity evolves through self-induced and self-devised means, our minds and our hearts working together in cooperation, in love, in kindness, and in compassion. And that is how we grow. So we will open it up now for questions, comments, discussions on what have you. SL.
Oh, we did have a question, but there was an interesting question that came across in the chat room. The idea of a question, whether would fulfillment of duties also be akin to fulfillment of oaths? And I guess we could add the resolutions and the vows we might make at this time of year. Is there a connection between fulfillment of oaths or vows and the fulfillment of duties?
Well, the greatest vow that we know of, are we there? We're okay. All right, I think we lost you just for a second. Anicca Pralaya. The greatest vow is the Kuan Yin pledge, that we will not seek personal salvation. That is a possibility, and that's the path of liberation. And that is certainly a path that many take. But the Kuan Yin pledge is a vow or an oath that we take to our higher selves, that never will we seek personal individual salvation, that we work for the salvation of all. Okay, here we have a question. We only have part of it on my screen here.
We can read it for you.
Could you read it? Because it would cut off on my screen.
It is thought that we reincarnate into successive forms in this current iteration of the universe, linear time. Is it at all possible that we have reincarnated through a series of successive universes?
Well, we would say yes, it is definitely possible. The only thing we know of in our teachings that is given out is that there was a chain of globes called the moon chain, which is the inert, not active representative of the Earth that we once evolved on. So the other speculation would just be we could not speak and about that. We don't know if anyone else could add anything to that. Yes, SL.
The answer to that question ultimately is, what do we mean by we that incarnates or reincarnates in a series of successive universes? Because universes come and go, just the elements and beings in the body come and go, have their pralaya. So that that spark of divinity, that Atma Buddhi, those universal principles, even at the end of what we call the monad, even at the end of a period of evolution and return to the one, at the time of the universe, they come forth again and carry on their evolution through re-embodiment in the new opportunity of the new evolutionary universe.
Yes, so we are eternal pilgrims. We go through equal periods. Well, we go through periods, not necessarily equal in time, but a time in a sense is an illusion, a necessary illusion to order our states of consciousness. So we never are not in the Bhagavad Gita, you and I and all the princes of the earth. We never are not. So we are always conscious in some state, in some place, in some race, some location, some planet, some universe. It's endless. So it is interesting to speculate where we might have been, where we may be going, but it's always now. It's never not now. And so more will be revealed, as it were. And if we're really conscious on this plane, then we've got much to work with and much to concentrate on and much to do. So that's all we can say about that, really. Someone is, okay, did MK want to say something? Or not? That's okay. Okay, we have one here. Okay, let me see if I can pull this chat up here. Okay. Okay, there wasn't MK. Here we go. A question. Is it thought that we reincarnate in a successive forms? Oh wait.
No, we just had it. I can see it. I can read it for you.
Can you read it? Okay, thank you.
Should nirvana be the goal of our spiritual evolution?
Well, it can be. Whether it should or should not is up to the individual. There's two paths. There's the path of liberation, which is nirvana, and that's a separation from the evolutionary stream that we're in, and one cannot help. One earns it, can take it. It is a choice. But there's the path of renunciation as well, where one renounces nirvana after nirvana until at the great dissolution of the planetary chain, then one does go into an exalted state with all those beings who made the grade, as it were, that evolved to the highest possible limits, a glorious race of adepts, which is at the end of our evolutionary cycle. But in the meantime, there are many practices where one can take nirvana, but they're broken off from the evolutionary stream. Now, in a sense, there's a price to pay for that because in the future, if one does take that avenue, then in a sense, they're not as advanced as they could have been if they had renounced it. But it's a choice. And it's one that we are presented with at some time. And then who knows if we'll take it, or we can't really speculate if ourselves or any other person, any other being would take that choice. But it is a choice that one can freely choose if one wants to. So SL.
Well, connected with that path of renunciation, is that not then renunciation for all the, not only for other human beings, benefit of other human beings, but for all those lives and beings that made up our instruments that we used in all those lives to gain that knowledge? We're not separated from nature. They were part of our being. So in a sense, we have a duty or a purpose to continually work for those beings who sacrificed of themselves so that we could evolve as spiritual beings.
That's a very interesting concept. What about the lives in us that make us this human being? There's the animal, mineral, vegetable that are within our lives. Aren't they sacrificing for us so that we, for our existence? What about them? They're the future, they're future humans, they're future self-conscious, sentient mind beings. So we have a duty to them too. If we really think about it. We saw another chat, but we're having trouble. Can someone read the chats as they come up, if you don't mind?
Yes. But is a choice or an But is a choice or a evolution of karma earned or not earned?
Well, we earn, don't we earn everything? So we say we earn, we get our thoughts, our words, our deeds, for good or for ill, we, through karma, we in a sense, we earn them. So we earn the good, the bad, and the indifferent. So it all plays out. We're not sure if someone wants to follow up with that or not, because that's very general. Do we have a more specific example, perhaps? Yeah. We don't know. Let's see if we missed some points in the talk here.
There's a question.
Okay, go ahead. Yes, MDW.
This evolution, is it our heart that grows or our mind? How we perceive the world is oftentimes interlaced with how we feel, how, you know, the ideas that we have, you know, what's good and what's bad, you know, and it seems that is that an evolutionary process, the heart?
We should think with our heart and feel with our mind. There are more, it's been, we're not a scientist, but we've heard and read that there's actually many, many impressions, more impressions that go from the heart to the mind than from the mind to the heart. So our heart center is where the true intelligence is, because it's compassion, it's love, it's universal. Whereas as the mind is the rational. The heart is the emotional, feeling, compassionate nature. SL?
There is a follow-up on the previous chat, re-expression of it. We can read it for you.
Okay, thank you.
It related to what is meant. Is it a choice to gain a state of nirvana or the evolution earned to obtain nirvana? And if we can paraphrase that, we think it means, is nirvana the result of our choice or is it just a natural outcome of evolution?
Well, it's both in a sense. I mean, it is a natural outcome of evolution, because even if one, as those great beings, those the elder brothers, the Mahatmas that make up that guardian wall, they have renounced it. So time after time, it's Nirvana's earned but rejected. So it's a choice, but it's also eventually, it's something that they do take. There's a great dissolution at the end of the planetary chain of the seven globes and the seven races, that it all goes back to the one. So there is it all goes back to the one. So it is eventually something that everyone needs and everyone will take. And that is where the greatest, highest possible knowledge during that grand evolutionary scheme And the numbers, the Hindu numbers that we use in the Ocean of Theosophy on that page 125 is 311 trillion, 40 billion years. So that is something that no one can even imagine. And then there's a like period of rest. So just try to wrap your mind around that. So everyone will, there's a great dissolution at one point. It's day and night, sleeping and waking. The seasons are our best guides by analogy. You know, activity and rest. It's all necessary in the grand scheme of the evolution of soul. Did MDW have a follow-up or a question or comment? And then SL also, you think?
Is it a fact that in this great cycle of evolution, and we're said to be, we've passed the midpoint, and that we are expanding in consciousness, or, you know, the mind principle is becoming more awake. And so isn't there a natural process of us becoming one, or becoming part of everything and being consciously aware of it? And, you know, rather than the choices that we make to hold ourselves back.
Yes. And we think the most succinct way to say that is all sacred mysteries are revealed to the earnest, humble, and selfless aspirant when the time is right. It is all revealed when the time is right, if one is earnest, humble, and selfless. SL, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. Previously, it was spoken of that ultimate pralaya, universal pralaya, when all enter into that state of oneness or absoluteness. And if we would liken that to our daily periods of sleep, all human beings need rest and sleep. Even the adept needs to put the body at rest. But what goes on in the mind, or what goes on in our spiritual nature during those periods of sleep and deep sleep varies with the choices we've made. So we all may enter that state, but not with the same degree of accumulated knowledge or consciousness, but all have to have a period of rest at one point.
Right. The saint and the criminal are one in the deep sleep state. We are all one, but what we take out of it is varied. So even though we are all one, we are to make the mind porous to the dictates of the soul. Then we can bring something back onto this plane. So the term monad, which is a unity or the one, it really is a unified triad or Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. That's from the Theosophical Glossary. So the duad is Atma Buddhi. That is the immortal part of man, which reincarnates in the lower kingdoms and gradually progresses through them until we reach the final goal and nirvana. And it does say here in the Theosophical Glossary that the final goal is nirvana. But we are taught again and again that the Kuan Yin pledge, it's a deferred nirvana. Nirvana is the goal, but if we defer it, we give strength and encouragement and intelligence to those lower lives that are future humans. Because everything was, is, or will be human, mind beings, manas, the thinker. That is where spirit and matter, which are co-eternal, they're two sides of the same hand, they meet and they are balanced. And that's the midway point in evolution. It's the cross, the equilateral cross, where spirit and matter meet at the midway point of our evolution, which the philosophy says was a little over 18 million years ago. The lighting up of mind, because before that, we were conscious, but not self-conscious. We were not responsible for our actions. We now are responsible for our actions. We're responsible for every thought, word, and deed that we do. There's no way to escape. We can't pray. We can't expect vicarious atonement because that's contradicts the whole purpose and meaning of evolution. Evolution is growth. Now the lower kingdoms, they grow unconsciously. We grow consciously, thoughtfully. And it's a long process, but it's just one day at a time. We're never given more than we can handle in any one day. It may seem overwhelming, but we can summon the strength. Yes, MDW.
So it seems that we have a purpose in life, and it's maybe a call a dharma that is. We cannot live for ourselves. We live for others. And that the term sacrifice is perhaps alludes to the fact that we need to sacrifice all our selfish desires up to our higher self. And perhaps that's the hardest journey that we can travel.
Yes. And sacrifice means to make holy, to make sacred. It is. We do have a purpose. We have meaning. If we're caught up in materialism, there's only so much you can get. And it's a dead end street. Really, it's a cul-de-sac. Materialism is a cul-de-sac. And we just end up spinning our wheels and going around and around in circles. But when we look around at our, we all have something to offer. It doesn't matter. A smile, a word of encouragement. We don't have to be great philosophers. We don't fancy ourselves as teachers. We look at the teachings and we try to assimilate the teachings by testing, checking, and verifying, and trying them out. We're told not to blindly believe anything because blind belief it's blind. It's just, you're believing somebody else's word for something, and that's not using our manas, our intelligence. We're not being thinkers. We're just living a middling kind of a life and hoping that we are relieved of the suffering someday. That's why it's so, a lot of religions that promise salvation, they're appealing because it's an escape. And then there are many who can't wait to escape because they're escaping here right now through drugs and alcohol. And it's like, it's mind numbing. Yes, MDW.
Well, did the Buddha say that, you know, all our suffering is created by us? You know, that we have to find that middle path where it's, where you're not too high or you're not too low, but you're steady in your thoughts and your feelings. So, I mean, isn't everything, everything that we see, we've actually created?
That's what our teachings say, but we need to, but many people don't believe that. They want to look for a scapegoat. Oh, he did this to me. You cut me off in traffic. Well, you know, it's rarely an intentional thing that somebody would do that. I mean, it could be intentional, but, you know, who knows? And then it could escalate into road rage. It's horrible. It's, you know, you need to let it go. We need to accept responsibility. If we realize that we are responsible and that we created this mess that we're in, that is the greatest single step we think anybody can take, because that's the beginning of knowledge. But if we're just pointing the finger and looking for an out and not accepting our responsibility, and then we're children. We stay in a childlike state. Yes, MDW?
No.
No, okay, SL?
At the very beginning of the talk, it was mentioned that some of the ideas on the goal of spiritual evolution are presented in our declaration. And so our declaration begins with the idea of independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. And it seems that independent devotion would be when we are attached to some organization which seems to be the focus of our devotion. And that seems to be the choice that most people make, or many people make. So is it necessary at some point in our spiritual evolution that our devotion becomes independent of forms or organizations, and in a sense becomes independent of that? What does that mean in terms of spiritual evolution?
Well, in spirit, yes, independence. It's crucial. It's crucial to be independently devoted, because we do not concern ourselves with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. If someone else has a sincere devotion, but they're dependent on something, well, that is their choice in a sense. But theosophist, theosophia means divine wisdom. And we choose independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. And go ahead, MDW.
Well, wasn't that how we grow? Through self-reliance? You know, that, to be independent, to look at things from that certain perspective as the observer, and judging not, and garnishing patience, and being equal-minded. You know, all these ideas elevate us. So if we can elevate our thought, we can change the world in which we live.
Yes. We are engaged in the true service of humanity with no distinctions. We strive for independent devotion because if we're dependent on anything, then we're not really thinking. We're being passive in a sense. It's very difficult to really, I mean, it's difficult, but it's rewarding. There are many rewards. Yes, go ahead, MDW.
Well, the path of knowledge and of awareness is not a passive state. It's an active inquiry into life and being, so that you know that we're not going to be endowed with a spiritual insight. We're going to have to look for it and search for it, and be let it be an active pursuit. And that's what theos.
Yes, you're just cut off a little bit there, but we're actually coming to the close of the hour. Just a few seconds left here, and we heard plenty there. We heard active pursuit, and that's what it is. It's independent devotion. It's an active pursuit. It has great rewards, and it's very stimulating. This study is one of its service, its virtue, its independent devotion to the cause of others. And what is the cause? The cause is spiritual evolution, not just of ourselves, not just of our fellows, but of all the kingdoms below us as well, because we are in one unified whole. We can't do without any part of our nature. It's all needed. It's all necessary. So we invite you to join us on Wednesday, either here in person at 6:15 for the library, or on Zoom from 7:30 to 8:30, 8:45, excuse me. And we'll be talking about evolution at that time. Thank you all, and goodbye.